Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're speaking about another issue that really affects our whole person health. As we do on this show, we try to be sensitive to not only Native American health issues, but to the whole philosophy of health that First Nation peoples have valued for centuries. And that is that health cannot be compartmentalized. You can't just talk about mental health or just talk about physical health, or even for that matter, just talk about workplace health. All of these things are interrelated. And today we're looking at an aspect of health that I feel is often neglected. It's how our workplace fits in with our health and how individuals who are leading out in workplace initiatives, in businesses, in tribal government can make a difference as far as the health of the individuals who are working together with them. Fortunately, we don't have to just speculate about these matters. I'm not going to try to philosophize on today's show, but we're going to go to someone who is one of the world's experts on this subject. His name is Dr. Ron Getzel. Dr. Getzel has a variety of appointments, including those in the private sector, as well as being a lead individual in the academic community. Dr. Getzel, it's wonderful to have you with us for today's show.
Delighted to be here, David.
Now, just to give our folks a little feel for your background, I realize you have an appointment at Cornell University. You're working with Thompson Healthcare, Thompson MedStat. Many of us in the health professions know that corporation. But just for all our listeners' benefit, give us a little bit of background about your diverse affiliations.
Sure. And thank you for inviting me to spend some time with you. I appreciate that very much. I've spent the last 20, 25 years doing research in the health promotion and health and productivity management arena. And one of the things that I've noticed is that there isn't a very good connection between the academic community, the scientific research community, and the business community. And there isn't a whole lot of transmission of information, knowledge, best practices, things that the business community could really use to improve the performance of the workers and the businesses in which they reside. So we set up the Cornell University Institute for Health and Productivity Studies to try to bridge the gap between the academic world and the business world.
Excellent. So basically, this is an outgrowth of things you've been doing for two or three decades. And what's been the impact there of the institute there at Cornell?
Well, we've done some really fascinating research. Most of our work is government-funded work, so we have contracts, for example, with the Medicare agency, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, to try out new risk reduction programs for seniors that have been tried in the business world with non-seniors for many, many years to see if they might work with the senior population. So we're starting that study now. We're also working with the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, on worksite health promotion research studies, and with the NIH, National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute, looking at obesity management programs at the workplace. So there's a lot of real strong interest on the part of the federal government to try to do this kind of research. And we're also funded by private employers who are interested in knowing whether their health improvement programs actually work.
Excellent. So I think one of the questions that often comes to people when they hear about someone who's doing something very innovative and, looking at this whole issue of how employers and businesses can contribute to the health of their employees, I think a lot of people just traditionally would say, well, that's not the the domain, really, of an employer. I mean, the employer is to be concerned about business, and health is something totally independent. Of course, we know that that's not the case at all, and most employers today are very concerned about the health of their workforce. What do you see has really driven that? Is it the costs of health care more than anything, or are there some other factors going on?
Well, it certainly is cost, because health care costs are double or triple or even quadruple in some cases the general inflation rate. But it's also another major driver is productivity of the workforce. Nowadays, much of American business is focused on knowledge workers, that is, people who run machinery, come up with creative ideas, do service work. But it's really the major asset that is valuable to the employer is the person. And if that asset is debilitated, if it's not working well, if it's distracted, if there are all kinds of health issues that get in the way, then what you need to do is attend to the human capital asset, the individual, the person who works for that business. And in many businesses, really, that's the most important resource that the business has.
Excellent perspective. I mean, in Indian country, I think many of our listeners historically have valued the people they work with, perhaps in a way that that often has been several steps ahead of some others in industry and other places, just because of the strong ethic in First Nation communities of really looking out for one another, caring for one another. And yet, I think there is so much room for improvement in any business and any employment model, whether we're talking about a tribal government that's the employer, whether we're speaking about a business run by a Native American. Let me just ask this question, because I think this maybe helps focus us on this interface between cost and productivity, if you will, healthcare costs. I know you've done quite a bit of work with looking at employers and the amount that they actually pay for health care claims on their employees. And in some of your material that I've read, and I've actually heard you speak in some national settings, you talk about low-cost companies, high-cost companies. Can you help us understand some of this terminology?
Sure. If you look at medical care costs alone, not even factoring in absenteeism and disability and those factors, the typical large American employer is paying somewhere in the neighborhood of $7,000 to $10,000 or $11,000 per year for each employee, and that oftentimes does include family members into that equation. But what's interesting is that some employers are paying lower amounts, around the $7,000 mark, and other employers are paying much higher amounts, around $11,000 mark. And it turns out that if you look closely at the employers that are paying less, around the $7,000 mark, those employers are actually investing more in the health and well-being of their employees. So they're looking for the underlying causes of healthcare costs. They're not just trying to address healthcare costs as a spreadsheet activity, but they're looking at what might be causing these large increases.
I mean, I think this is fascinating, because you could say, if someone could be listening today, for example, Dr. Getzel, and they can say, well, you know, I don't need to be concerned about this, even though I do run a company, it's a small company, or even if I'm on a tribal council and the tribe employs a lot of people, we've got other services in the community that are addressing the health needs. But what I hear you saying is, if we're really concerned about whatever business operation we're involved with, it behooves us to be proactive as far as the health of our employees. Am I hearing you right?
Absolutely, yeah. Why wait until the disease or the disorder has become so large and so unmanageable and so expensive? Why not try to prevent it, you know, go upstream, essentially, and try to prevent the disease from occurring in the first place?
Now, in Indian country, issues that often grab attention are very similar to those that grab the attention in other segments of the population. You mentioned earlier today some of the problems we have nationally with weight and some of the initiatives that you're working with in that regard. Diabetes is, of course, a huge concern. Are these the types of conditions that businesses are thinking about in the back of their minds, or is it a broader, more holistic approach, or is kind of a combination of the two?
It is broader, but if you look at the actual causes of death in the United States, and not just death, but also disease and disability, you know, the number one and number two major diseases are heart disease and cancers. Mm-hmm. And if you flip it around and ask the question, what causes heart disease and cancer, primarily it's modifiable health risk factors, things like obesity and smoking and hypertension and hypercholesterolemia, diabetes, stress. There are a variety of behavioral and biometric risk factors that cause these diseases. And it's really, you know, if you want to step back for a moment, the two major behavioral risk factors are smoking and obesity. Those are really the main factors that are driving increasing healthcare costs and disease and disability. And those things are getting worse, especially obesity.
I think one of the dialogues that I tend to hear quite a bit about is, well, we can say that obesity or smoking or poor dietary habits are factors for disease. We can pretty reliably show data that supports that. But many people become much more resistant to talking about programs because they say, well, yes, these things are factors, but we don't know that the kind of programs that we offer or could offer would make any impact on these things. I'm sure this is behind a lot of the research you do to really seeing if employers, in this case, can make a difference on these risk factors. What are you finding when it comes to this whole question?
Well, you know, the evidence is that worksite programs can actually change the risk profile of the population if done properly, if it's done, if they're done based upon evidence-based practices. And we have about 20, 25 years of experience in this area. We're still obviously learning how to do this better. But certain critical ingredients for these programs actually show significant long-term changes in the risk profile of the population, which in turn can lead to reductions in costs.
So basically, your research is conclusive that employers, if they do things in the right way, they can impact not just disease down the road, but they can help people make changes in their lifestyle that will help them be healthier and more productive today.
Yeah, it's our research, but it's also several literature reviews that have been conducted by the CDC. And in fact, right now, the CDC, its Community Guide to Preventive Services, is going to be releasing its most recent literature review on worksite programs, and the evidence is pretty strong that these programs can have a significant impact on a number of behavioral biometric risk factors as well as productivity.
Well, let's say then, Ron, someone is listening today. They're in a position where they have some voice in what kind of initiatives their business, their tribal government, their institution will have as far as dealing with employees. What kind of things should someone be looking at to go about doing things in the right way as they address these issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's several different parts, and the most important is essentially an organizational commitment to do this, that this is not an activity that's off on the side and different from the overall mission of the organization, but really part and parcel and embedded into the vision and mission of what the company and the organization has in mind, which is to improve the health and well-being of employees and to provide an environment, a work environment that's conducive to healthy living. So first activity, really the first step, the first key metric is leadership support and making sure that this is something that's upfront, an important objective for the organization. And then building in programs around that. And I guess we can come back in a minute to discuss what some of those programs might be.
Yes, we'll do that. We want to continue talking with Dr. Ron Getzel. He's an expert in the issues dealing with workplace health initiatives, things that can make your business actually more successful at the same time you're helping your employees as far as their health and their productivity. It's an exciting subject. Lots more practical information coming. Stay tuned for more. I'm Dr. David DeRose.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, also known as NAHI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHI is available at nahicharity.org. The Lifestyle Center of America is another American Indian Living sponsor. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 1-800-596-5480.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people and full of people. For the people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. We're talking today about a powerful concept, and that is how employers, how workplaces can make a profound difference in the health of their employees. It's a domain that historically was not always valued by employers. In fact, if you look through the annals of occupational medicine, if you will, you'll often find that employers often exacted a toll higher than they realized on their employees. There were often costs to the employees as far as occupational injuries, other dangers in the workplace that really undermined the health of those working in the establishment. Today, though, we're really beginning to focus not only on preventing hazards in the workplace, but also employers being proactive in making a difference as far as improving the health of their employees. And this is something that Dr. Ron Getzel has found makes good business sense. Ron, it's great having you with us on today's show.
Well, thank you. Appreciate being here.
We've been talking about the practical aspects of this whole issue and how a company can really move from a company that maybe has not put a lot of emphasis on the health of their employees to one that can make a profound difference. And in our last segment, you mentioned how important it was to really have an organizational commitment to the health of one's employees. But let's say that's happened. The leadership is all together, the tribal government, the business, whether it's whoever owns it, the leadership team, the owner, says, look, we're going to really make a priority to have our employees be as healthy as possible. Something more has got to happen than that, though, right?
Yes, and what I'll do is talk about things that an employer can do that are focused on the individual versus things that are more organizational in nature. And so starting with the individual, you know, one of the first things that you want to do is get the employees more aware of their health and health status. A lot of people just don't know whether they have any health problems or any health risks. And so an important first step in this entire process is to administer a survey. They're called health risk assessment surveys that mm-hmm. employers can take. And essentially, it asks a lot of questions about your health and well-being. It asks about your weight, whether you exercise enough, what kind of food do you eat, how much stress you have in your life, how much alcohol you drink, whether you go and get your preventive screening examinations with a doctor, things like that. And then it sends back a report to you and says, here's what your health looks like. Here's some areas that you're doing terrific and keep it up, and here's some areas that you may want to focus some attention on because you could stand some improvement. And it provides some practical guidelines as to how to do that. So
basically the first step in this process, Ron, then, excuse me, is is helping the employees to recognize really where they stand at this point in time.
Exactly. To kind of give them a benchmark, this is how healthy I am or unhealthy I am, things that I'm doing that are helpful or not helpful. And then what can happen is that you can be directed into interventions and programs and opportunities that can help improve whatever problems are identified. So if you want to lose weight, here are some programs to help you lose weight. If you want to mm-hmm. manage your stress, here are some things that can be done there. If you want to quit smoking, here's what can be done to help that. And oftentimes, those kinds of programs are delivered by having professional counselors and coaches and navigators help you figure out how to do that, because these things are hard to do. It's hard to change your habits. But if you can get good guidance and good advice, many people are actually able to change their lifelong habits.
No, I mean, this is a critical point, and I appreciate you bringing this out. So let me kind of step back one step, Dr. Getzel, and let's say someone's tuning in today and they're saying, I was thinking that I needed to find ways to spend less on my employees. I mean, I've been spending all this money. I look at the bills, how the health insurance keeps going up, or how the claims of the employees keep increasing in a self-insured situation, whatever it might be. And what they're hearing today is, instead of investing less in the health of their employees, if they want to lower their costs, they may need to invest more on the front end. And for someone who's never really thought this way, they're hearing about these health risk appraisals. I mean, how does someone even know how to find one of these, or which one to use, or do they need to be working with a consultant? Can some employers just do this on their own? I mean, how does someone go about even these first few steps?
Well, I mean, there are some national organizations and websites that employers can go to. For example, there's one called the Wellness Councils of America. They're based in Omaha, Nebraska. The acronym is WELCOA, W-E-L-C-O-A. And that has a wealth of information about programs, and it's got interviews, it's got a listing of various vendors out there. It's really a very valuable resource. There are other resources out there, such as the National Business Group on Health or the Institute for Health and Productivity Management, Integrated Benefits Institute, and there are several others, including coalitions, business coalitions and groups around the country. Or they can just go to government websites. The CDC has some really terrific information about worksite health promotion, and the NIH has some as well.
So the Centers for Disease Control and National Institutes for Health, I mean, people
right.
just plug those into a search engine and and then look for workplace health?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's say this has happened in an organization. Maybe we haven't made the case strong enough because you've articulated the point, but I mean, let's face it, Ron, you know as well as I do, if someone's hearing this for the first time, they may be pretty skeptical. You know, here's some guy who's, working for Cornell. He's dealing with industry. Yeah, he sounds like he's, some researcher, but it's a hard sell, isn't it, for someone who's never thought this way to think that spending more money on health is going to actually decrease health care costs?
It does sound strange at the beginning, but if you step back for a moment and think about it for a while, if you think that if you improve the health of people, if you get them to practice healthy living, if they are fit, if they eat healthy, if they don't smoke, if they manage their weight, if they manage their stress. You know, these things, intuitively, I think most people will realize that if you do all those things that, you know, your mother told you to do when you were a little child, that that actually will result in a healthier lifestyle. And if you lead a healthier lifestyle, you're less likely to get many of these diseases that are very painful and very expensive, like heart disease and diabetes, that are really the main cost drivers of employers' health plans.
So granted, this, you know, makes sense as we think about it, but you've got some hard data where you've looked at this whole issue of return on investment, you know, what people spend on preventive health services, on helping their employees be healthy, and how much money they save. Can you share with us a little bit about that side of the coin?
Sure. I mean, there's about 20 years of research being done in the corporate community. So there are long-term studies that have been done, let's say, with some companies like Johnson & Johnson, Motorola, General Electric Company, Boeing, Chevron, Citibank, and a few others, where we have actually looked at the amount of money that the company spends on these kinds of health improvement programs, and then what they save as a result over the long term. And our studies go out 3, 4, 5. One study went out even 9 years. And by and large, the vast majority of these studies have shown that you save money as a result of this kind of investment. And the typical return on investment is somewhere around $3 saved for every dollar that you spend, and that's usually over a three-year time window.
So I spend a dollar today, and I'm going to spend $3, save $3 over the course of the next 3 years?
That's right.
Now, there obviously must come some point of diminishing returns, right? I mean, you can't just keep pumping money in and it's going to keep saving you more money. Isn't there some ceiling effect or not?
Well, the key to these programs is actually to keep it up, to not just have a one-shot program, not just spend it once and wait to see the dividends and returns come in down the road, but to keep providing the same level of investment over time. And the return on investment is actually fairly stable. You know, it maintains itself over time, but you have to keep providing these kinds of programs to employees, the old employees who've been part of the program for a while, as well as the new employees that are coming into the organization.
So basically, kind of going through this sequence then again, if someone is starting out with a focus on this concept, they say, look, at this data sounds exciting. I've always felt I needed to do more for my employees, and this is giving me a reason from a business model to say, look, at this is not just altruistic. It's not just true to my, you know, tribal traditions to look out for people around me, but this is in the interest of my business, in the interest of this operation our tribe is running, whatever it might be. And so first, the leadership comes together. Then they start assessing where employees are and then start putting together some of these programs. We're going to hear more details on how you can do that as Dr. Ron Getzel continues with us on today's edition of American Indian Living. You're listening today on Life Talk Radio and on Native Voice One, the Native American radio service. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We'll be back with a lot more. Stay tuned. Coming back shortly.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today. From World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today with Dr. Ron Getzel. Dr. Getzel is extremely well-known and highly regarded in the whole area of workplace health issues, especially the area of wellness, improving health among employees. Dr. Getzel was recently one of the featured speakers at the American Public Health Association's annual meeting and shared just some tremendous material about this whole subject. He's trying to present that in a listener-friendly form for non-professionals, and we hope that as he and I speak to professionals, we are getting that word out clearly. I think it's coming through loud and clear, Ron. Let's step back just for a minute, because we've been speaking about the role that employers can play in the health of their employees. And we said that one of the key roles that the employer can have is helping the employee be aware of his or her health status, maybe using one of these health risk appraisals, a quiz or a test, if you will, that shows the employee where his or her health risk areas lie so they can change them. Is there some obligation, though, Dr. Getzel, on the part of the employer as well, or is it really just highlighting concerns that the employee should have?
No, I think it's broader than that. You know, if you want to look at what are the key ingredients to get people to change their lifelong health habits, there are four parts to it. The first is what we just talked about, which is awareness building, kind of making people aware about health and, you know, what's healthy, what's not healthy, what should I be eating, what should I be not eating, how do I exercise, how do I lose weight, you know, basically knowledge transfer and mm-hmm. awareness building. The second part is motivation, which is now that you know you need to do this, what's it going to take to get you to start doing these things? And motivation can come from a number of different sources. For example, it may be that your family wants you to do something, you know, for the mm-hmm. sake of the children. It may want you to quit smoking. It may want you to not drink as heavily. It may want you to lose weight because they care for you. So that mm-hmm. essentially provides a motivation for you to actually begin to act on your health issues. The third part is skills, which is you may want to do all these things, but you don't know how to start. You don't know mm-hmm. where to begin, what tools you might use, how much food should I be eating, how much weight should I be losing, how do I go about doing these things. And so there are a variety of ways in which you can actually learn the skills to change behavior. It's like any other skill that we have. You've got to essentially learn how to do it and learn how to do it well. And the fourth part, which is something that's really important, is for the employer to provide you the opportunity to do these things. So it's not just the individual who can make this happen, but it's really the employer that provides the opportunity. Now, what are some of the ways that an employer provides an opportunity? For example, if you work in a workplace and it's dark, dank, poor air quality, and all they provide for you are vending machines with awful, terrible, fatty foods, they don't give you a chance to have a healthy meal. There are no opportunities to get exercise and physical activity, and it's a very stressful environment. You know, that kind of situation is not very conducive to improving one's health. Mm-hmm. So employers can do, you know, a number of things to help. They can provide healthy choices in vending machines. They can provide more food options, healthy food options in cafeterias. They can give people some time off to participate in health-promoting activities. They can provide flexibility in work hours so that people can exercise at the gym before work or after work, or not just at the gym, you know, on their own. They can provide better work-life balance to reduce stress. So there are a number of things that the employer can do to actually improve health in partnership with the employee.
Now, one of the things that really struck me as interesting is this concept of time off for mm-hmm. activities that promote health. How would that play out in the real world?
Well, you know, obviously it depends upon the kind of work you're doing. If you're working on an assembly line, you know, you can't easily walk off and do something. But today, many jobs that people have, you know, actually are quite flexible. And so in some cases, the employer may say, look, as long as you give me that time back, go ahead and spend, you know, the next half hour doing physical activity, walking, exercising, going to a class, et cetera. And, you know, obviously, we don't want you to diminish your productivity by doing this. But it turns out that actually when people engage in these kinds of activities that improve their health, their productivity goes up. So there isn't this very simple equation. If I take time off to do something healthy, I'll actually reduce the amount of time that I give my employer.
No, I mean, this is something I saw, you know, played out in my life. I was in a position a while ago where seeing a lot of patients, lecturing, doing some research, a variety of things, and I found that if I could get a little time off in the middle of the day, I was in at a facility that had some nice grounds, and just take a walk 15, 20 minutes, that really seemed to re-energize me and help me to be more productive rather than if I just tried to plow right through that time and really not pay any attention to my health while I was there at the work site. I mean, I was still exercising, you know, when I was at home in addition to that. Is that a common phenomenon that people will report?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. In fact, there's this notion of a corporate athlete. You know, just like regular athletes, they sprint, they put a lot of energy into the game, but they need an opportunity to recoup. They need an opportunity to regain their energy and focus and concentration. And the same is true for all workers, for anybody who's doing anything, that you can't just keep plowing along and putting in 100% effort because you burn out, basically, and that's the problem we face.
No, I mean, I think that's excellent. Well, let me come back to this other point. You mentioned these four issues that the employer can be involved with as far as helping employees change habits: the awareness building, motivation, skills, and the employer providing opportunities. The motivation issue was another one that I think has evoked a lot of dialogue over the years. I mean, you know, I've heard of employers having contests and drawings and different incentives if people do a certain amount of exercise or accomplish a certain health goal. But I've heard other people say, you know, this is kind of childish, or we're not going to do that in our environment. It's not along, you know, our value structure as a corporation. How do you evaluate some of these ways that employers have tried to motivate health behaviors?
Well, first let me say that I think it depends upon the culture and traditions of that employer. So mm-hmm. if this kind of competition, you know, is not part of the culture and tradition, I wouldn't try it. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there are many employers where there's a lot of competition between units, between different categories of employees, and they're constantly trying to outdo each other in a fun way, in a kind of a competitive mm-hmm. but fun way. And it those kinds of things actually work very nicely in that kind of situation. For example, I'm thinking of a large truck manufacturer, and they have a competition called Trucking Across America, where they basically walk each day and they count up the number of steps that their employees have. They give each employee a little pedometer, which is this device that you attach to your belt, and it counts the number of steps that you take. And then they, on a daily basis, you know, enter their data, and then you've got different groups, different units competing against each other on how many steps they put in, and they like it. They, you know, there are prizes that they give out and so forth. But in other situations, that may not fit. So really, you have to temper this. You want to make sure that it's, you know, what's going to work well within your culture.
Very good. You know, this issue often is discussed in other terms when we speak about health at the workplace. A lot of people over the years have talked about not only decreasing health care costs in terms of doctor's visits, hospitalizations, you know, major medical issues, but of course there's been a lot of attention placed on absenteeism. It seems like lately there's another term that's being used, presenteeism. What is that talking about?
Well, presenteeism indeed is a new term that's entered our vocabulary just in the last 5 to 10 years. So unlike absenteeism, where you're absent from work, presenteeism, you're there at work physically, but you may not be there 100% mentally. So you may not be as focused. You may not be doing as much as you might do if you were in better health. And I can give some examples. You know, let's say you have a migraine headache, for example. That's obviously going to distract you significantly. Or if you're depressed, or if you have an allergy where your nose is running and your eyes are watering, you know, and you're not able to concentrate and focus, or you're under a lot of stress, or even if you have hypertension, high blood pressure, and your medication is out of whack. You know, it's not working well, so you may feel dizzy, you may feel listless. So there are all kinds of examples of how health can actually impact in a very powerful, significant way your productivity.
You know, one thing that I found interesting was some data. I'm not sure if your group actually did the original research on this or if I just heard you cite it, this so-called HERO study, where you looked at some of the different risk factors you could identify and how those contributed to costs as far as employees. Am I giving you enough information where you could elaborate a little?
Yeah, we did the HERO studies, and HERO, by the way, stands for Health Enhancement Research Organization, which is a conglomeration, really. It's a group of different organizations that have come together to do good, interesting research on the economics of health. And so a few years ago, we did a study where we collected data on about 46,000 people, and we looked at their health risks, and we looked at their behaviors and their biometric measures, things like blood pressure and cholesterol and weight and glucose levels. And then we also looked at how much was being spent in terms of their health care costs, so how often they went to the doctor and the hospital and so forth, and how many dollars were being spent for that. And we found out that really there the two most important factors that cost a lot of money were people's mental well-being, that is, whether they were depressed or whether they felt they were under stress. So people who were depressed and felt that they were under a lot of stress cost a whole lot more money than people who didn't have those the psychosocial or mental health issues. In fact, if you had both of those problems, if you were depressed and stressed, you cost your employer about 150% more, or 1.5 times more than somebody who didn't have that.
It, what's so fascinating about that data is it's often a different aspect than we would think as far as contributing the greatest amount to healthcare costs. We're going to talk more about this. We're talking with Dr. Ron Getzel. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You're listening to American Indian Living. It's coming to you today via two networks, Life Talk Radio Network and Native Voice One, the Native American radio service. More compelling insights, money-saving insights for your business from Ron Getzel. Don't go away.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by the Lifestyle Center of America. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center and used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 800-596-5480. American Indian Living is also sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, known as NAHAI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHAI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHAI is available at nahaicharity.org.
Canned vegetables. Hey, Duncan, get over here. Need you to stay with me and your brother, okay?
I am.
Well, closer. Come on, help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out.
I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I want it.
Sorry. Duncan!
I want to put the number thing.
Too bad.
Mommy would let me.
Yeah, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome to our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Our guest today is Dr. Ron Getzel. He's the director of the Institute for Health and Productivity Studies with Cornell University's Institute for Policy Research. He's been sharing with us something that may be surprising if you haven't been keeping up with the medical research literature, at least as it relates to employers, and that is that actually spending more money on the health of your employees in a proactive way, in a preventive way, can actually save you lots of money down the road. So if you've been listening today and you represent a tribal organization that is employing individuals, whether you're a small business owner, whether you in some way sit on the board of an organization, whatever that might be, if you haven't been having serious conversations about what you can do for the health of your employees, it's not that you've just been negligent as far as those who are working for you, but you're missing out on opportunities to actually save money, to help you become more competitive in the business environment. That's the message that Dr. Getzel's been giving us. And Ron, as we've been speaking about these topics, we just finished talking about some of that very interesting research you did with over 45,000 individuals looking at certain factors and whether they predicted higher healthcare costs. You mentioned the surprising thing. I think it's surprising to many people who are used to having their blood sugar tested and their blood pressure checked and their weight evaluated, that more important than all those things, at least individually, was were the mental health issues.
That's right, yeah. People's essentially mental status, that is, you know, how they view their health and how how in control they feel in terms of their health can be a very powerful predictor of how sick they feel and then how often they go and see the doctor. And in fact, right now, what doctors are asked to do is when patients come to see them for routine care is to also ask some questions about their mental health state to see how they're doing mentally, if they're depressed, if they feel under stress, and sometimes address those issues in addition to addressing physical problems they may have.
No, I mean, it's a surprising subject for many doctors. I have a good friend who is an internal medicine specialist, and he read one of these studies that came out saying that something like, you know, a third or a quarter of the patients that walk through the doors of an internal medicine practice are depressed. And he said, no way. He said, I'm not seeing that many depressed patients. And he started doing exactly what you're mentioning, administering a short questionnaire to his patients. And sure enough, he found that a huge percentage of them were dealing with depression, which got him motivated to start looking at these issues in his patients. So it's happening a lot of times below the radar screen, and I'm sure if it's true in a doctor's practice, it's got to be true in the workplace.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what often happens is somebody will walk in and say, I've got, you know, these aches and pains, and I'm not feeling right, and so forth, and they'll be subjected to a lot of testing. So they may go through thousands of dollars of testing to find out what the root problem is, when it may have been that the person basically was depressed as kind of a something that's underlying some of these physical problems.
So I think for people listening today, Dr. Getzel, you know, they've heard you make the case for helping employees see where they stand as far as their health, seeing if they have, you know, weight issues, smoking issues. I mean, things that you might say are pretty evident, but doing one of these health risk appraisals kind of, you know, hits you right between the eyes and says, look, these are your problems. This is how it's impacting your health and, you know, your potential of living a long time and being productive and being able to contribute to your family. But what about the mental health area? I mean, isn't that harder to evaluate, or do these questionnaires, these health risk appraisals, do they do a pretty good job of picking up on mental health issues?
Well, they're just an initial screen. So they often will just have a few questions about that. And sometimes just asking one question, something as simple as how often do you feel down, blue, depressed? And if somebody answers, you know, most or all of the time, that's a pretty good clue that there may be some underlying problems. And you can do a more in-depth assessment using, you know, a clinician to try to dig deeper and try to find out whether this is a true depression problem or whether it's just, you know, kind of a momentary I'm not happy problem. But yes, the assessments that are used oftentimes touch upon as many as 10 to 15 different categories of health risks. And so you can begin to identify those areas where you may want to focus more attention and also get the employer to address some of these things. And by the way, you know, to emphasize what I said earlier, not only can you administer this health assessment to the individual, but you can also administer a health assessment to the organization. The organization itself may not be mentally healthy. It may be under severe stress, and there may be things that need to be done to help improve the organization to provide a better work environment.
Now, are you saying that there are questionnaires, if you will, that are designed specifically to evaluate the health of an organization?
There are. There's actually a whole field of organizational psychology and organizational development that has developed some of these questionnaires. And when we do our research, we also assess the organizational culture in addition to individual health issues.
Wow, I mean, that's fascinating. So would someone find this material by going to the Centers for Disease Control website or this WellCOA website that you mentioned? Where would someone find how to get one of these questionnaires?
There, and also in NIOSH, which stands for National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, they have certain parts of their website that are focused on organizational stress issues and other issues. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, their work site area on their website also has some tools that they've developed. In fact, the ones that are primarily focus on heart disease, cardiovascular disease. There are several tools and instruments that are available there. for employers, many of which we've developed for them.
Very good. Very good. One other question that goes right along with this, Ron, is I can imagine many employers or people that have a role in making decisions about employees, they're saying, look, we haven't been doing this, and this sounds like these guys are talking about opening up a whole can of worms. I mean, right now, yeah, sure, maybe there's some people that are depressed, but if we start asking the questions and realize there's problems, then we're going to have to do something about it, and it just sounds like more than we'd want to bargain for. Is there any legitimacy behind that type of feeling?
There is. And, you know, one thing that I would guard employers against doing is ask the questions but not do anything in response. I agree with you. If you start asking whether these problems are in your workforce but don't do anything to address the problems, then you actually can create more problems for yourself than before. So what you need to do is put together a comprehensive program that has a beginning, middle, and end. And oftentimes you can use professional vendors, organizations to help you do that, but you need to do kind of the initial assessment or diagnosis to figure out where the problems are biggest, most pronounced, and then introduce programs and interventions to try to correct those problems. And that has to be done in a very professional way using evidence-based medicine. There are evidence-based programs. You can't just, you know, send stuff around in terms of brochures. That's not going to make the difference. And then you've got to measure and evaluate to make sure the programs are working. So you're right. You need to have a package of programs rather than just take one piece at a time and try to introduce that.
Now, I'm right now, Dr. Getzel, on the WellCOA website, this Wellness Councils of America, WELCOA.org, and there's an option here where someone can become a member or get a free trial. I mean, is this a reasonable place for someone to start who this is all new for, or is there a better place where someone can start evaluating some of these issues?
I think it's a very good place to start, and I don't even think you need to become a member. You can just download information without becoming a member if you don't want to. And I don't even know if there's a cost. It may be free to be a member, so I don't know. But I think it's a very good place to start because they can direct you to other resources.
Well, Ron, it's amazing, but our time has just about slipped away. Why don't you summarize kind of the key message from your perspective today?
I think the key message is that if you're intent on improving the health and well-being of your employees, that's a good thing, but it's not the only thing that you're going to gain from this. There's actually a very good business rationale for doing it. There's a good rationale for improving health, and at the same time, you may see savings in terms of costs and productivity improvements.
Thanks so much. Dr. Ron Getzel with Cornell University, their Institute for Policy Research. I'm Dr. David DeRose. For all of us with American Indian Living, both Life Talk Radio and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service, we're wishing you the very best of health.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. We hope today's program has contributed to your living a healthy life. American Indian Living Radio is brought to you by the Native Education and Health Initiative in partnership with the Lifestyle Center of America and Life Talk Radio. American Indian Living is also distributed through the public radio satellite system by American Indian Radio on Satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications.